Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. And today I am interviewing somebody who I like to think of as one of the best kept secrets in magic. This is a guy who's been there, done it all, bought the t-shirt, an incredible close-up magician, a great stand-up magician, and a really nice guy as well, and somebody who we can all learn a hell of a lot from. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Paul Roberts. How you doing, Paul?
Wow. After that, I'm not sure we'll get my head out the office. Thanks, pal. That's really, really kind of you to say. Thank you so much.
It is true. And I genuinely mean that. You are one of the nicest people that I've met in magic. In an industry where, let's be honest, you know, on the arsehole scale, it veers towards that direction a little bit with magicians. But you would help anybody at the drop of a hat. And I've seen you do it over and over again.
Helped you in Blackpool, Paulie Finger.
Yeah, I mean, right, this is a perfect example of how nice this guy is. So I'm doing the Bear Pit in Blackpool, which if you don't know what the Bear Pit is at the Blackpool convention, it's mental. You're just basically running around doing 15-minute close-up sets over and over again in a really crowded room. And literally half an hour before it's meant to start, I sprained my finger. Like, I can't even bend my forefinger. It was like I fell over onto it. I sprained my finger just as I'm about to start doing close-up. And I'm like, right, okay, I'm running underwater. I need to get some movement. Oh, my God, that hurts. You were running around trying to get painkillers. You even offered, if you remember, to do the Bear Pit for me if I couldn't do it. Like, you were prepared to step in at the last minute. I mean, that tells me everything I need to know about Paul. Paul, you are one of the good guys, man.
Oh, thanks very much. I wish we could all be like that. You know, that, like you said, there's some very interesting characters in this thing that we do. But
exactly.
Anyway.
But I'm so glad that I got you on the channel, because I've worked with you, I've gigged with you, I've been to gigs with you more than once. We've worked together at close-up jobs. And I've also we've worked together when I've been doing the illusion show and you've been on stage doing a stand-up spot. If you remember, do you remember that? It was when you were filming your chairs.
Yeah. It was a long time. I remember your act. It was great.
Thank you.
Very full of energy, fast-paced. That was a lesson. That wasn't a job. That was a lesson.
It was. So,
thanks for all the lines. They were great.
Oh, no problem. You can have any line you want in, man. But you are so good. So I wanted to get you on the channel and I want to talk to you about everything and get some advice off you and just see if we can pull some information out of that brain of yours. But for those people that don't know who Paul Roberts is, let's start from the very beginning. It feels like you've been in magic forever, but when did you get into magic? What was your origin story, Paul? What got you started in this weird and wacky, wonderful industry?
Well, I guess I've always been into stuff. When I was growing up and the Rubik's Cube came out, the body popping and the break dancing and skateboarding and martial arts. I was one of these people who wanted to do everything. I loved stuff, you know, and then I loved practical jokes. And then one day I went into a joke shop and bought myself, I think it was a credit card through bill, and it was this like big plastic thing and you put a credit card in. I think the card went one way and a duplicate card came out the other way, and I went, wow. And then I bought myself some dental dam and I did the old coins through the glass. Do you know what? That's a great trick, by the way.
Amazing.
Still today. And then I just went from there. I spent 5 years on my own and I'd never met another magician. And then I was invited to the Chester Guild of Magicians. And they said, we've got a close-up competition next month, and we want to put you in. And I was so nervous, and I was very lucky. I don't know how, but I won it. So it was just, and I went from there, really. I just love it. But I still use martial arts in the magic I do now. I use I'm break dancing and body popping in it for a laugh. I use all those attributes I grew up with in my magic today. In fact, I think it was Rudy Kobe who said that. He said, as you were growing up, use anything you can and put it in your act today. He said, the audience will love you for it.
So, how old were you when you won the competition? Because you didn't know any magicians up until that point. How old were you when you won the competition?
Believe it or not, I was 19.
Wow. So, at what age did you get into magic?
I think I was about 15 then, and I started learning some bits, you know, but I could never afford to get anything at the time, you know. It was just watching people on TV, watching Paul Daniels and stuff like that, you know, and trying to figure out how he did it. And it was good times back then, though, because everything was, you know, it was good times.
That's incredible, because you were 15 when you got into magic and you were 19 when you won the close-up competition, and you didn't really have much of a budget to buy stuff. And back then there was no such thing as YouTube where you could just go and binge a bunch of stuff. So no. With very limited experience and very limited resources, you go in 4 years to performing in front of magicians, which is a scary thing to do, and winning a close-up competition. I mean, that's just incredible.
Yeah, I think it's even, I mean, I can remember the first real thing I got, and it was this big, thick Supreme Magic catalogue. And I'm sure if anybody out there had one of these things, I mean, four people had to carry it down the path to the house. You know, it was huge, and it had all these wonderful things inside that I couldn't afford at the time, but just amazing. But I think having limited resources back then, made me a little bit better and made me appreciate things a little bit more.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, because these days there's access to so many downloads and so many tricks and so much. People buy something, don't properly learn it, put it in a drawer, buy something else. But back in the day, tricks weren't coming out all the time. So when you got a trick, you had to make the most of that trick, because you didn't know when you were going to be learning something else.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were stuck with you probably had two decks of cards. One would be a taper deck or a Svengali deck, and one would be a normal deck, you know. I think I had something called a Gibson coin nest, which was an Eddie Gibson thing, and it was a 10 pence piece and four or five coins fitted into it, and just amazing. And I used it everywhere I went. I treasured it. You treasured things back then, didn't you? Things like you said, it really meant something back then.
Yeah.
But now it's just, yeah, well, you know, I think there's a lot of more impulse buying these days.
Yeah.
You know, so I know yourself as a creator, you really think about what you put out. And I don't think any of your stuff really is an impulse buy. I think when you look at your stuff, you go, can I work this? Yes, I can. Can it be? Yes. It's not like something that you see in a convention and you just go, yeah, I'll have that one. You know, I think any of your products.
You get back to the room, you look in the bag and it's full of a whole bunch of stuff and you have no idea why you bought it. Yeah. We've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even working in the shop, you know, people used to come in and out of Mark Mason's shop, JB Magic.
I wanted to bring that up because obviously the first time we met was at JB Magic. And I've interviewed Mark on this channel and he had so many nice things to say about you. How did that come about? Because that's an incredible opportunity to work underneath Mark Mason, who's, let's face it, when it comes to not just magic, but, you know, marketing and sales, demonstrating, understanding human behavior, there's nobody that really has it more than Mark. So how did that come about? You've just won your close-up competition. You've been in Magic for 4 years. How did you go from there to working at JB Magic?
I became semi-pro. So I started doing gigs for agents and stuff like that. And that was for years and years and years. And then I got a job at Camelot Theme Park, where I played Merlin, and which was an incredible learning experience. There used to be a jousting tournament there, and there used to be a warm-up guy, a very talented guy called Steve Royal, an amazing, very talented guy. And he was off one day, and they said to me, "You're warming the joust up today, 2,500 people." And I said, "I haven't done this before. They're making me up now." And within 5 minutes, they pushed me out of these doors in front of 2,500 people, and I was doing the warm-up. So living in Wrexham, that brought me kind of halfway to Blackpool, because Camelot Theme Park was in Chorley.
Yeah.
And then I'd pop in and out the shop, and I got quite friendly with Mark and Darren and all them. And one day, Mark had to go somewhere, or he was off, and Darren was on his own in the shop. So they said, would I come and just sit with Darren while we, just in case the shop's too busy. So I did. And then Mark offered me the job. So Mark's excellent, by the way. He is very, very good. Very funny. But very, very business-minded. You know, he's very switched on all the time. Mm. He knows exactly what's going on. Very clever man.
Oh, he really
nice
is.
Guy.
How long were you at JB? Yeah. There until the very end?
No. Yes, I was. Yes, I was there about 5 years, but Mark was going to move everything, relocate to America. And I'd been over to America to work with him both in the manufacturing bit. I'd been demoing for him in America. And we also did some gigs together, getting picked up in Rolls Royces and stuff like that. It was amazing, you know, and traveling to gigs. It was really funny. But they did ask me, Mark and Trish did say to me, you know, why did I relocate? But it just wasn't too much of a big decision. So from there, I went to Lightwater Valley Theme Park in North Yorkshire, which I'd been there a couple of times and worked for them. And they wanted to give me a full-time job there. So off I went there.
Wow. So you literally always had something going on as well as the magic. So you've always had gigs, but, you know, first of all, it was gigs and Camelot. Then it was gigs and JB Magic with Mark Mason. Then it was gigs and going to Lightwater Valley. Is that important, do you think? Because I have a lot of people on this channel that are new to magic. They want to become a full-time pro. They ask the question about when they should go full-time pro. Do you think it's important to have something else other than gigs, like you've done there, or do you reckon that's not an issue?
I think if you are someone who lives at home with your family, you know, like your parents, I mean, and maybe you could give it a go. But once you've got a mortgage, as you know, and you've got bills to pay, you have to really, really think about it. I mean, I was lucky enough. I went from Lightwater Valley and I went to Gulliver's World in Warrington. And I did quite a few years there right up until COVID. But if I wouldn't go pro unless I really, I'd need 12 months work, I think. Because, it's tough out there. It's tough. I like to have a base like the shop, Mark Mason's shop, JB Magic, or like Lightwater Valley or Camelot or Gulliver's. I like to have a base and then, you know, work from there. It's almost like being semi-professional, I suppose, because you do gigs at night, but in the day you're doing your normal kind of thing, and I don't know. But I wouldn't, I think just relying on gigs is very, very difficult these days. So I've met so many people who've got day jobs now who said they're not too proud to feed their family. you know, I think you should have a good think about it before leaping out there into the big wide world. You know, it's great if you can, but don't, you know, maybe don't just specialize in close-up, maybe do some cabaret as well, maybe do some lectures, maybe have some products for sale. Then it's not too bad, is it? Because you haven't, you know, you haven't got all your eggs in one basket. Does that make sense?
It does. It absolutely does. 100%. And as somebody who spent 5 years demoing magic, here's a question for you. These days, and you know as well as me, these days, you said it earlier, so much new magic is coming out. Like, there's new magic coming out all of the time. Like, every day, 20 or 30 new things. As somebody who's, like, worked full-time as a magic demonstrator in a magic shop, what does a trick have... Because what does a trick have to be in order for that shop to go, we're going to push that particular trick? You know, as somebody who's worked in a company that was, like, selling magic to magicians all the time, is there a particular thing that you look for when a trick gets released that you kind of go, you know, we're gonna push that one out to our customers?
Yeah. To be honest with you, fast tricks. I think anything that's visual, bit quick visual tricks these days. I think there's very few workers who will come in and ask for something, you know, ooh, what's the latest trick you've got? If you're a worker, you come in and you buy a thumb tip, you buy some rope, you buy a deck of cards and some roughing spray, and then you go, I'll see you later. So that doesn't really, from a dealer's point of view, sell that well. I think you need, like, quick visual. I think that's why Mark used to sell things like the 21 card trick, where the cards would change, or there's a hole in the card and there isn't a hole in the card, and everything's got the dental dam and invisible thread, you know, the fishing line stuff on it. And Mark is very clever with that. So I think if you were going to sell products, you need quick and visual, snappy things. Otherwise, people get bored. I remember when I was in America once, and I was in, I think it was in the Lance Burton magic shop, just wandering around. And a gentleman said to me, he said, oh, do you do three fly? So I said, yeah. I said, I'll show you if you like. And I went, coin's going to travel from this hand here, here to here, here to here. Then they're all over here. And he went, great, can I show you my three fly routine? I said, yeah, I'd love to see it. And he went, many years ago on an old Indian plane and for 20 minutes. And I was like, oh, it was great, but I don't think that in this society now, especially with all your YouTube stuff and everything's, you know, it doesn't hold the audience that much. But going back to the original question, as a dealer, I think they've got to be short and snappy. I think you lose people otherwise.
That's really good advice. I'm going to ask you about presentations in a minute, but before I do, let me ask you one other question. Out of all of the tricks that you demoed when you were at JB, which was your favourite? Out of all of the ones that Mark created himself?
I think it was Think of a Card, really. Even though it wasn't, it was on his on one of his DVDs. Mm. But to just say to somebody, you know, shuffle them all different, think of one, and then classic force it on them, was just probably, they couldn't get their hand in their pocket quick enough. I think that was great. And also Mark's 21 trick was a great trick. There was it's so clever. It's a very, very good trick. Easy to do. I mean, there was other stuff that, you know, we used to demo all the time, but I think 21 and doing Think of a Card and Classic Force from Mark's DVD, for me, was probably the best thing ever.
So let's swing back to close-up, Paul. Let's swing back to close-up. You've obviously done a lot of close-up magic over the years. And as I say, I've worked with you at gigs, and you have this ability. And I've seen so many magicians at gigs, and there's very few that can do what you do. You have this ability to walk over to a big table in a crowded event and just get every single person on that table focused on you and nothing else. And one of the things that I've seen that I hate, I've got to be honest, I hate it, one of my pet hates, is watching magicians go up to a table of 10 people, for example, and they're performing to two people that are next to them, and the other eight aren't engaged at all. They're having their own conversations. And I've seen you over, I've stood back and I've watched you, and you walk over to a table, and within like 5 seconds, they are completely engaged with everything that you're saying. How do you do that? Because I've seen some of the greats in magic struggle at doing that. So what's your secret? How can you walk over to a table and just grab their attention when you're in a busy room and it's a huge table and there's a lot going on? You still get everyone's attention within a couple of seconds.
There's a few things I do, really. Sometimes I'll walk over and I'll give a nod to the people closest to me. And then when the other two are talking at the back of the table, sometimes I'll just like point and to these people, and I'll point to the people at the back and they tell them to be quiet. And I turn away and then I look back right at the time. Sometimes I'll go up and I'll say, "Good evening, table 17. My name is Paul. I'm your magician," which makes it very personal to them. I say, "If you like what you're about to see, just go wild. If you don't like it, go wild. We're going to have a good time." Just energy. I don't know. This, you need the glow. You need that glow around you. You need to just work and work and work. A lot of the time as well is when I'm doing a trick, I might glance over to the next table. And I say to that table, I say, "I'll be with you in a minute." And then I carry on with this table. Do-do-do. And we're having a laugh and we're doing jokes. And then the next table now are all primed for me. They can't wait now. They've seen this table having a good time. So now when I go over to that table, I spot the other table I'm going to go to next. And halfway through, I'll be with you in a second. And here we go. And it's great. I love it. Easy. Sometimes if I'm there early, when people are walking into the function room, I stand by the door and I say hello to everybody right at the door where they all walk in. They don't know who I am. So when I walk over to their table after, they go, "Oh, we didn't know you were a magician. We thought you worked." Anything to just, you know, just be able to talk to people. Mm. So, I don't know. I've seen magicians circling tables and scared to go in and just, I don't know. I just do it. I don't really think about it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. What about yourself? You just go in there and you just, yeah, see, I mean, you've got the glow. You've got there's the energy about you, you know.
I try
confidence.
I think you've got to be larger than life, haven't you? You've got to go there and you've got to be larger than life. "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen," kind of just win them over right from the first second. I think that approach is something that's so important, and it's overlooked by so many magicians. They spend more time thinking about what's the next trick that they need to do, whilst in reality, the hardest part is winning the audience over, because if they're not bought into you, they're not going to listen to you, and you can do the greatest tricks in the world and they don't care.
It's very interesting about the way the question that you asked me, because you said you've seen me working, you watch me go over to tables and get everyone's attention, and but you probably never seen a trick that I do. You didn't know I did it, if I did chop cup or think of a card or card under glass, or you don't even think, you're more interested in me going up to the table and commanding that, you know, getting everyone's attention. And it's quite strange how we think when you're a full-time pro, you know, you don't really care what tricks the other ones are doing. You just want to see. Yeah, that's very interesting, though.
For me, tricks aren't as important as seeing people's attitude. Although, having said that, I mean, you do have to say, when you actually start doing tricks, the opening trick is very important, because that's what's going to establish your credibility. That's what's going to get people to go, "Oh, okay, this guy is actually really good." What's your opening trick, Paul, generally?
Varies all the time. Sometimes it might be chop cup, but it's hard if there's a centerpiece. And then sometimes I get people to stand up who can't see, but then it's a little bit of effort for them then. So sometimes I do Wayne Dobson's ring flash, big flash of fire, which is great because the other table start looking. I'll be there in a minute. "Oh, he's coming over. Oh, I can't wait." Sometimes I'll say, "Does anybody know this woman here, this lady here?" And then it gets everyone's attention. And then I say, "She's been doing magic now for the last 10 years. And I say, sir, just think of a card. Have you got one? A red card, a diamond? He can say, no, if I'm wrong. And for the first time, name your card. He says, nine of diamonds and a classic faucet on the woman. And then what? Once one of them are involved, everybody's involved. Yeah. So I've got loads of different openers. I do. I kind of play it by ear, really. I much prefer to bring my magic up here in a corporate situation than down there, like in a restaurant situation. So because there's so much stuff on the tables and people, it's hard sometimes to look down. People need to look either across or up, you know.
Yeah.
I've done jumbo coins. I've done the Flurious routines for openers. I don't know. It really depends. I've got so many things, but it has to be visual and quite quick as well and engaging. So hope that answers the
question. Yeah. Really, really does. And obviously, I know you as a stand-up performer as well. Like I say, we've worked on stage together. It's a totally different thing being able to do stage magic and close-up magic.
Absolutely.
And I know there's a lot of close-up magicians that have a burning desire to go and perform on stage, but they don't know how to transition from one to the other. As somebody who has success, you know, you said it yourself, you know, you got pushed out in front of 2,500 people at Camelot. That's a nerve-wracking situation. But obviously, off the back of that, at some point, you started doing stage shows and cabaret shows, and you started walking out on stage and smashing it. Do you have any advice on transitioning from close-up to stage magic and how people can do that?
I think if you were just a restaurant magician, I think it'd be very hard to do that transition. But when you start working corporate events, a lot of the time, people start to gather around one table at the back. And before you know it, you're almost in a cabaret situation. And I think that's a great, I think do lots of corporate gigs. Do lots of house parties as well, because when you're doing a house party, a lot of the time, people will, instead of you doing club, they gather around and it gets you used to, I think gets you used to being in front of people. Every time I do a stand-up routine now, I always have music in the background. I mean, I have a remote control, an audio ape, and every trick I do, there's no quiet spots anymore. There's no dead spots. I have music when I walk on. I have music when I walk off. If I invite somebody to come on stage or into the middle of the garden with me, music plays as they walk up. Funny music plays as they walk off. It all makes sense with the tricks. For me, the music is so, so important. And get yourself a little PA system and get yourself some kind of thing you can, a button you can press and play music as you're inviting people up and down. And it's kind of like you're doing the close-up, really. You can do Chop Cup if you wanted to. I know Mark James does Chop Cup in his stand-up routine. I think it's a great trick for a lot. It plays well. It's great.
Again, brilliant. Now, you put a DVD out a little while ago, didn't you, on your chairs routine?
Yeah.
Which you filmed when we were doing that gig together. Like, I that gig that we were at together, I think it was you, me, and John Gimmons. You filmed it there, I believe. That's obviously your variation of the classic Paul Daniels chairs routine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing routine. That is an amazing routine. I suppose I've got three questions here. One, is the DVD still available? Can you still get it? And if so, can you get it from you or where can you get it from? Because I remember watching that routine and thinking, oh my God, this is great. And secondly, I've seen so many people not, I've never seen hardly anyone do that routine before or anything like that routine because it's considered a little ballsy, do you know what I mean, that kind of whole dual reality thing, but I've seen you go out there and smash it. Have you got any advice on I suppose that routine and can you still buy the DVD?
Yeah, Murphy's have it, and you can buy it as a download, or if you went to a magic shop and you said, like, for example, Darren Robinson has Warped Magic. And if you went to Warped Magic and you said, can I buy the download? He can get it for you. Or or real workers have it as well. And I think a lot, you know, I think Alakazam have it, Peter Nardi. I think they all got it, really. With the electric chairs, what I brought into the act was a clipboard, and it had a declaration on it. And what I've, the declaration didn't really say anything. It used to say, I, the undersigned, agree that anything should happen during the next 10 minutes. It's nothing to do with Paul Roberts, the magician. And there was a funny little gag. But really, when I used to turn the page over, it used to say, follow the secret instructions written on the tissues. And because I brought this clipboard out, they already knew what to do.
Yeah.
And yeah. I used to say for the next 10 minutes, will you follow my instructions to the letter? And they would go, yes. And I shake their hand. It's a gentleman's agreement. And I said, I've got a declaration here. It reads this. I lift the back of the declaration up. It says, please follow the secret instructions on the tissues. They've agreed to do everything I say. We've shook on it. They've read that. They know now that what, you know, when they're doing my routine or they know to follow instructions. It's dead easy. They do it. I'm looking for two guys who like a laugh. Another thing I used to say is, if you wear glasses, please put them on now, because I'm going to ask you to read something in a second. So now there's no chance of anybody coming up on stage and not being able to read the instructions that say do this or do that or stand up or shout out or whatever, you know. So I try to cover every angle. So when they go up on stage, they do exactly what I say. Everything's crystal clear to them. They can read. So, yeah, it's all on the Murphy's thing. But it works. It's done it for years, you know, so.
Oh, it does. It's a real showstopper of a routine. It really is.
Yeah, it's just a bit different. I saw Paul doing it a couple of times live, but it wasn't as good as the TV performance. And I thought, how can I make this guaranteed? So they, you know, and I wanted to bring noises in there as well. I didn't want him to just jump up. I wanted him to shout out. So on the instructions, I'll say, shout out when you jump up or whatever, you know. I wanted noise in there as well. So, but yeah, it works and it's great. Excuse me.
Great that you can go out and do a routine on stage to the biggest audience, and all you need is a clipboard and a box of tissues and a couple of chairs from the venue.
Basically, yeah.
You know, yeah. I'm thinking, I when I go and do a show on the same stage, I've got a long wheelbase van and 4 hours of setup in order to do the same thing, and you're just turning up with a, you know, with a clipboard.
It's great
when you think of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to do a great routine as well by a guy called Steve Bedwell called Shake, Shuffle and Twist with the two pot noodles. Have you ever seen that thing?
Yeah, in fact, I have a project coming out very, very soon. And Steve gave me permission to include that on the project.
Shake, Shuffle and Twist?
Yeah, the triumph routine with the pot noodle pots.
Right, whoever's watching this now, get this thing Craig's putting out, because I didn't know that wasn't a setup. I promise you, I did not know that. Bloody hell, mate, that is such a good routine, and I have done that. You know about pack small, plays big. I'm surprised someone like Bill Abbott never got hold of that, you know, because Bill's got some great stuff. Pack small, plays big, as
well,
you
I'm
know.
Doing a project on the invisible deck, and it's called Visible, and it's a deep dive into routines with the invisible deck. And I reached out to Steve and I was like, look, I really want to include your routine on here. Would that be okay? And he's like, yeah.
Nice guy.
Very nice.
And can you get me a credit card? I want to buy this new thing from Greg. Get the credit cards out. I don't care how much it costs. Sorry.
I'll tell you something. Steve Bedwell, his Walkman act.
Yeah.
The best competition act I've ever seen.
Yeah, you can't buy that, so you could never do it if you bought it anyway, could you?
It's,
you know, incredible. With the sponge balls and the, yeah, brilliant.
I just remember, like, I'm going to get that Walkman underneath that hat three times and you're not going to see it. And I'm there watching that Walkman and I miss it every single time. The misdirection, the timing, the routining was so good.
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. I mean, I saw that act on a TV screen. And it's very hard to misdirect on a TV screen, but the bugger still got me. Brilliant.
He's great. He absolutely is. And I think it was I think it was Mark Mason that originally put me onto Steve Bedwell. It was him that said, you need to check. That's one thing that I noticed about JB Magic. They were all, everybody that worked there, you, Darren, Mark, you guys were always so helpful. Do you know what I mean by that? Like, I remember going in to JB and you and Mark suggesting Michael Kaminsky's book Miracle Material.
Yeah.
And just like saying, hey, don't buy any of that. Buy this book, which is still one of the best books I've ever read. So, I mean, you don't see that all the time with magic dealers these days. They just want your dollar. They want your money. And let's be honest, Mark wanted your money as well. And he was very good at getting money out of people. But he also wanted to make sure that people had the right magic, I think.
Yeah, I spot on, really. Spot on with the book and spot on with... We did always try to help, you know, even over the phone sometimes. I mean, the shop was the strangest place to work in the whole... We used to have a guy who used to come in on a regular basis, dressed up as a clown and, you know, with Blackpool, there's all street entertainers. And this guy who had the nose and the lipstick and the curly wig. And I said to him one day, I said, so where are you working today? And he went, I don't work. I said, no, there's the clown. He went, I don't work as a clown. He said, I get on the bus from Preston to Blackpool every day, take two buses to come here because I just love magic. So I said, you dress up as a clown with the baggy pants and the squirty flower. Oh, yeah. Crazy, crazy place to work, mate. We had a guy come in once and he said, do you have any, at the time, videos by P. Hamill? So we went, I don't know who P. Hamill is. He's my favourite magician, P. Hamill. And we said, we've never heard of P. Hamill. Next minute, the guy rolls up his sleeve and this huge tattoo of the face of Michael Amar with P. Hamill underneath. Now, I don't know how, I don't know why, but he must have thought Michael Amar was called P. Hamill. I don't know. Crazy, crazy place. Used to get people coming into the shop and they go, what have you got for £20 or under that can be totally examined because I've got a gig tonight? And you'd go, oh, no, but please. So it's incredible working in a shop. I tell you, it's...
You've just hit on my pet hate right there, which is people just like trying to learn a trick before going to a gig and putting no effort into it at all. Like,
yeah, I've got a wedding tonight and I think, the poor people. Because I'm sure as a booker, you can spot if somebody is a pub magician and there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's wonderful. You do tricks in a pub. But if you're working and you're getting paid a lot of money, then there's a difference. There's a level. And people can tell, I think. I think people can tell. I'm talking non-magicians can tell if they've hired a pub magician or they've hired a pro.
I completely agree. I completely agree. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. Okay. Well, let me ask you another question. You've done so much in your career. Like, I mean, you've done an awful lot. Do you have any advice on getting gigs? Because, you know, I mean, you've never once had, you know, you've said ever since, like, you left school, you've been a full-time pro or you've been a part-time pro, but you've done something else that's to do with entertainment. It's not ever been, you know, so... Have you got any advice on getting gigs? Because, you know, you never seem to be quiet. You're always busy. And now that the world's opening up, I mean, we just spoke off camera and you said that you've just got a big contract, which with I don't want to say who or anything, but you got a big contract, which is huge. I'd love to get that. I mean, it's amazing. So, I mean, and that's like post-COVID. So is there any advice on getting gigs and putting yourself out there? Because you and I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, you don't really focus on the digital marketing side of things, do you? You're not like, you know, SEO, Google AdWords, website. So what is it that you do to make sure that you're always busy?
Wedding fairs are great. Wedding fairs are phenomenal. I do a lot of them. I suppose working in theme parks and working in magic shops, a lot of word of mouth. I do like to put myself out there, but not, as I said, I'm not very good at all the digital. I know you're an expert at all that. Really are good. It all started really wedding fairs, I guess, for me, and it just accelerates from there. But I always keep in touch with everybody. If I do a trade show, I've got a list of all the trade show people I've worked for, because I'm very good at trade shows, attracting people to the stand, just like you would be. You've got the glow, you're big, you're bold. I don't know, really. Maybe I've just been lucky. Give away a lot of business cards. I don't really, if I'm going out with friends, I don't really take magic tricks with me to pubs, because I think it kind of, like, for me, it makes it look too cheap and like you can, you know, but I do take business cards and I tell people wherever I go what I do. I'm always approaching restaurants and stuff like that and saying, you know, I'm a magician, would you like me to come in and do a free demonstration? I'd still do a lot of that now. In fact, I'm doing something next week. Yeah. So, yeah, just word of mouth. I always, when I do a wedding, I always give the bride and groom a bunch of business cards, because everybody will go up to them after and say, you know, oh, we love the magician. Oh, here's his card. They do all my work for me. When I do a wedding, I always say to the people, if you've liked it, please let the bride and groom know. And if you didn't like it, just say you never saw me. And everyone laughs and they always tell the bride and groom. And if I'm at a corporate event, I always say, if you liked it, please let the boss know. If you didn't like it, just tell me you never saw me. Laugh and laugh again. I don't know, really. I market myself on the day, really, more than doing all the SEO stuff. It never really worked for me. I was never that clever. I'm a bit thick, actually.
You know, the point is, if you're busy, you don't need to worry about it. You know, you only need to go and worry about that if you've got no work. But you've always had a steady supply of work, so it's never been an issue, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you work a lot, but what do you think works best for you? Does the internet work best for you, or is it previous clients and recommendations?
It's a combination of networking, recommendations, and digital marketing for me. I stopped doing wedding fairs years ago. Not because they didn't work. They did work, but I had kids. And I was so busy working in the week and on Saturdays that on the odd Sunday that I had off, what I didn't want to do is leave the house all day to go and do a wedding fair. I wanted to spend some time with my kids. So, I made the decision not to do wedding fairs, not because it doesn't work, but because I needed to spend time with my family. So,
yeah, that's amazing. I think that's absolutely amazing. You just keep going up in my estimations, Craig. You know, absolutely brilliant, mate.
Brilliant. I think, you know, wedding fairs are good. I interviewed Owen Strickland on this channel. I don't know if you know Owen very well. And, you know, Owen talked about how much he gets out of wedding fairs as well. It is a viable way to get work. It really is. What's your strangest? Everyone's got a strange gig story. What's your strangest gig story? Something that's happened to you at a gig that's just like kind of really bizarre and out there.
Oh, loads. Let's have a think. I was doing Ring Flash once. And for those of you who don't know, it's a Wayne Dobson thing in his book, Profiles. It's a fantastic routine where you borrow a ring and you melt it into a chain. You loop the chain over, you put some flash paper on it. You light the flash paper. And then, of course, the ring appears on the chain. Very good. It's a very, it's a gig getter for me because everyone can see. And I lit the flash paper once and it was a slow burner and it decided to jump off the flash paper and land on someone's lap and set their lap on fire. another time, there was a candle in the middle of the table. So I went with the flash paper and I dipped it into the candle and I whipped it out and the ring appeared there, but a piece of candle wax, hot wax, flew up and landed on someone's face. Never got, just this was when I was first starting and a bit more excited, you know. I did a gig with Harry Robson once, and they put a smoke machines in the venue around all the corporate tables. I think it was Sean McCree was on it as well. And we went into the room and you couldn't see past your own face. And then they wanted us to entertain straight away. I tell you what, I was at Camelot and I was on stage and I was doing the floating table. So, and also doing the Doug Malloy, Michael Jackson lean. So I'm floating the table and I'm miming and it's going here, there and everywhere. And I clip in to the Michael Jackson lean. And I had a kid on stage who was waving his hands like this and making it all happen. And I'm like, and I leaned forward towards the kid with the table. And I knew I wasn't quite in the Michael Jackson lean. I wasn't quite in it because there's like a little clip thing in the bottom of your shoe. And I was here and all of a sudden, boom, and the table smashed to bits and I fell flat on the floor. And there was a big shock in the audience. And I got up and I looked at the kid and I looked at the audience and said, well, he tried his best. Give him a round of applause anyway. And the kid walked off. And then that night I got some glue and I glued all the table back together.
Oh my God. Oh, wow. Incredible.
But I tell you what, that Michael Jackson, I was there and it was like, you know, bang, ooh, straight away. Beautiful. Epic fail. But not on my part, it was the kid's fault. I think the kid's still in therapy now. I see him once a week. Oh. Anyway, he's 40-odd years old now. It was a long time ago. But he's doing well. He's doing better now. So hopefully he'll be... Yeah, a couple more sessions, it'd be all right. So.
Oh, dear, mate. That's hilarious. I love that. Have you worked many restaurants, Paul, over the years?
Yeah, I used to do residencies in Chiquito's and Frankie and Benny's a lot. I quite like. I mean, I think it's a lot different doing corporate to restaurants for me. Mm-hmm. I think restaurants are down here on the table and corporate is all up here. Yeah. You know, there's a couple of things still you can do in a restaurant, but sometimes you can't be as loud and as proud sometimes because you don't want to put other people off who may not want to see you in a restaurant. I've done a lot of restaurants.
Restaurants? That's a question that comes up again and again. How to get restaurants?
Yeah, find out where there's another magician and then tell them you'll do it for a five or less.
It's perfect. It's the best strategy I've ever heard.
I just used to go in and said, you know, can I come in and do a demonstration for you? And I'd say, I'll do a free night, the whole night free. You don't have to pay me anything. And then every single table that I go to, I make a big fuss of them. I do some great stuff. And I say, if you like it, please let the manager know, I said, because they might have me back every table. Goes up to that manager and says, that was the best thing I've ever seen. Which brings me on to another story. I was on a cruise ship once and not working, just as a guest on Carnival Cruise Line. And a magician came over, he's a young lad, and he come over and he was shaking. It must have been his first gig. And he was trying to put a card in his mouth and I was trying to look down and, you know, and eventually did it. And he's trying to force and he was shaking and really nervous guy, and he he fumbled his way through a couple of routines, and then he said, "Oh, thank you," and walked off. So I went straight up to the manager of the room, and I said, "Are you the manager?" He said, yeah. I said, "I've got a comment about your magician." And he went, why, what's happened? I said, "It's the greatest thing I've ever seen." I said, I've no idea what he was doing, how he did it. I said, "That was absolutely fantastic." And then a couple of days later on the cruise, this magician found me. He went, "Oh my God," he said, "I can't believe what you've just..." Because other people were just dissed the guy, but the guy was just starting. I wanted him to really, you know. So that's the kind of person I am.
Again, going back to what I said at the very beginning, you're a super nice guy, mate.
Isn't it? I thought it was great that the guy had the guts and he was trying, and you know, probably his first ever gig. So hopefully now he's a full-time pro and yeah, doing well. So there you go. Be nice. It's easy.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? One thing that I've noticed about you, and it comes with being nice. A lot of the time when I see you, you're on a multi-man job. Everybody seems to give you work. Like you seem to, I don't know if do you know what I mean? It's like when anybody gets a gig, it's like, "Oh, I'm going to go to Paul because, you know, we know Paul's going to do an amazing job and he's a super nice guy." Is that a viable strategy to get gigs? Like be super nice to everybody, get to know as many magicians as possible so that when they've got gigs coming up and they need more than one magician, they come knocking for you?
Can be, but I think if you were doing it as an act, I think in this industry, people would see through you very, very quickly. I just can't help the way I am. I just... like to help people.
But that's an advantage of being a nice person. I mean, you're a nice person.
Possibly, yeah.
You know, like I say, everybody I've spoken to, and my own personal experiences as well, is that you are such a nice guy, and you'd help anybody with anything.
Absolutely, I would. Another thing that a good way of getting gigs is I do venues with a very talented magician and hypnotist called Kevin Jay, and we go to pubs and we say, "We're going to do a night for you, if you like. The night will be Close Up Magic. There'll be a 30-minute stage show by myself and then a 2-hour hypnotism show." And we go and we do really rough pubs and we sell tickets, and it's great experience. And that's a great way of getting work, you know. Team up with somebody else sometimes, you know, and because it's a completely different act, the hypnotism act. If you know any hypnotists, get with them and just, we have a great time. We go to Scotland, we go up and down the country, we go everywhere. It's fantastic. We love it. So maybe, you know, you could do that or do a free night somewhere, as I said before. Tell every single table if you liked it. Please, please, please let the manager know or the manageress, and you'd almost certainly get more work from there. Even if it's not a residency, I'm sure they will use you whenever they can.
That's great.
So it's almost like doing a wedding fair, really, doing a free night in a restaurant or a free afternoon or whatever, you know.
That's great. So, one last question, which is, what's next? Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't done, that you want to do? Because you've released products, you've worked literally all over the world, you've done so many different types of magic, you know, you've spent years going back and forth to America, you've been there, done that, and you've worked with all the major theme parks in the UK. Is there anything left that you want to achieve? Because obviously, you know, you've still got a long way to go before you retire, but is there anything that you want to do? Is there anything that you haven't done yet?
I've always got lights at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. I'm always thinking, you know, about something else I'd like to do. And I've recently, believe it or not, I've been studying hypnotherapy.
Wow.
Because I've always been fascinated by hypnotism anyway, which is probably why I teamed up with Kevin Jay. But I like the helping side of it. And I thought, would it be nice to help people get over problems and this and that and the other? So during COVID, I studied as much of it as I could. And I've got the title now as a hypnotherapist. I'm just waiting for the clients. You know, that's my next step. I'm not going to leave magic. Not, you know, never. I love it too much. I mean, I'll come back from a gig after driving 2 or 3 hours and I come back home and I sit down and I put magic on TV. I don't know. It's what we do. But I think my next step would be to move over to the hypnotherapy side and get myself some clients with that and see how that goes. Just help a few people out and, you know.
Do you know, Jason Carlin?
No.
He's a Canadian magician. He did that trick, Red Carpet, where you pull the bag off and you've got Spider-Man underneath the blind.
Yes.
And
that's great.
And he also did Third Degree Burn, the blister trick.
Yeah.
His company Poltergeist has released so much magic. Well, I did an interview with him recently and he talked about 5 years ago, he set up a hypnotherapy practice as well. And now he does magic and he does hypnotherapy and he keeps it very much separate, but he enjoys the fact that he's not just doing magic, that he's got this two completely different aspects of his life. And it's nice because the magic's there, but the hypnotherapy's there as well. And the two bounce off each other really nicely.
Yeah. Well, I studied with a very talented hypnotherapist called Alex Royal or Jonathan Royal, and Stuart as well is a friend. Stuart Harrison helped me, and them two really, really boosted my hypnotherapy career. I mean, Alex or Jonathan Royal is known as the bad boy of hypnosis, but he's not a bad boy at all. He's great. He's a really nice guy. It's just a persona. He's great. It's a nice little setup. So I absolutely love it, and it just gives me a chance to help a few people out. You know, do something nice.
That's fantastic, Paul. This has been an incredible interview.
Thank you. You say this at the end of every interview. Well, this is the wrap up. He's reading this from a book.
No, but the thing is, why I always know it's going to be an incredible interview, because I pick the interviews and I only pick the people that I want to interview. So I've got high anticipations and it's always hit. And this has been a great interview. It really has, because you are, you know, you're a fountain of knowledge. You've been around, you've been there, you've done that, you've bought the T-shirt, and very few people have got the chops and the flight time that you have. And thank you so much for coming on the channel and sharing the stories, the information, the advice. It's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, well, it's been a pleasure. I mean, I didn't think I really had anything to say, but it's you. You're the one. You put these words into people's mouths, mate. You're very good. This is, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan.
Thank you so much. That means a lot, mate. It really does. So if people want to reach out to you, do you have like any social media that people can reach out to you? Do you have any social media that people can reach out to you on? Facebook, Instagram, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Paul Roberts Magician or Paul Roberts Magic. I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn. Look at me going on. Come on.
King of social media, yeah.
Yeah. There's some products on Murphy's, or you can get them from any good magic shop in the UK. So, as I said, there's some really good shops over here. So I can't recommend any of the shops highly enough. Get the chairs. I've got a chop cup routine out. It's nothing like any of your stuff. You know, I'm just I chew hammers. I'm an amateur compared to yourself, buddy. But yeah, you can find my stuff anywhere.
Your chairs routine is worth its weight in gold. It's absolutely brilliant. I love it. And I've put it in my cabaret after watching you do it and blowing away the audience. I bought the DVD and I've done it several times. It's great.
Oh, that's coming from you, mate. Open the double doors, Ange. My head is getting... Yeah, just open the double doors. Get the credit card. I want to buy the thing with the... All right.
Oh my god, you're amazing, mate. It's been brilliant, guys. Leave a comment down below, let Paul know what you think. Yeah, don't forget to make sure you subscribe to the channel. 24 videos every single week. So I'm going to be back tomorrow with another 3 videos. But Paul, one more time, mate, thank you so much.
Craig, before I go, do you know the difference between a pickpocket and a peeping Tom?
No.
One snatches watches. There you go. Is that in your net? That's in your show.
That's my new. I thought I'd heard them all, but that's a new one even on me.
I thought that was hello in Spanish. Watch your snatches. But there you go. Yeah. So, I don't know.
Mate, you're a legend. You are. And next time we see each other, I'm buying you a beer. Thank you so much.
Mate, thank you so much. And look forward to seeing more of your stuff coming out. I'm going to go now and watch some magic talk on YouTube.
Boom. Guys, we'll see you again tomorrow. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.